This is Talk of Asian Marketing with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior. Our website is ccc.qbook.tv, where you can find other audio and video episodes with photos, links, and information related to today's conversation. Subscribe to leave comments and access research episodes with applied topics and research reports. Okay, we're recording. This is show 86, Transportation in Singapore. 3, 2, 1, go. Welcome to Talk of Asian Marketing, and I'm here today with James Stanworth from Tsinghua University in Central Taiwan, University of Education.
Hey, Clyde, it's good to be here.
Someday I'm going to get your school right.
Well, that's what you said for the last 10 years probably now since you were working there as
shows.
Well. 85 shows later. When we hit the magic 100, we're really going to get it right,
that's,
I reckon.
That's my goal. That's my goal, to figure out where you work and where I work.
That's why we do the shows, isn't it?
To learn something. Anyway, I'm Clyde Warden from National Zhongxin University and Sterling University's Institute of Retail Studies.
You passed the quiz. You may continue.
Today's topic, we're going to go to another location, which is Singapore. We've had a few things from Singapore, a few shows from Singapore. In fact, in between the shows we're doing recently, we have some videos from Singapore. But I know you've been to Singapore a few times. You were recently there for a conference, James.
Yeah, we've been over a few times. And I think the thing that really impresses me, it's very clean, it's a very vibrant kind of city space. But I have to say the thing that I really appreciate is the transportation. It's kind of like Hong Kong. Everything is real clean, easy to get around. And that experience really kicks off with the arrival and getting into a cab. And that takes you straight into the city. And we're talking, about 25, 30 bucks, I seem to remember.
Yeah, I think usually people do jump into a taxi if they're going in town, especially if you arrive really early or really late and the MRT's closed. I think you say that, so that must mean, since you're from the UK, that must mean you're comparing that to back home then. Because a lot of Americans would say, you know, places like London seem really convenient. And you're saying here's even more convenient?
Now you're really pushing, because I have to say the last time I went back, London's done a huge amount in terms of its transportation, but there's still, you'd go so, so far, I think, to beat the experience of Hong Kong, to beat the experience of here, because of the frequency. I mean, when you're looking at the transportation here, you've got so many choices, and each one is really fast and it's really efficient. I mean, we can start with, we've mentioned the taxis here. Of course, they're plentiful, and they're comparatively cheap.
You know, you were saying you get from the airport to downtown. It depends on the time of day, 15 to 20 Sing dollars, which would be somewhere around 15 U.S. dollars, I guess. So not expensive at all, because in the U.S., if you get off an airplane and you're going anywhere in town, you're talking a minimum of 50 U.S. dollars.
Right, yes. I mean, I haven't even thought of taking a cab from the airport in UK, because I have to say we did it probably almost 20 years ago. I took a cab down to London Airport from Manchester, and that was £150. So I wouldn't even think about it in UK. That's kind of, you know, the hurdle we're talking about in terms of money. So they're kind of convenient. The other thing that I love, I mean, I think you're not such a big fan, Clyde, is the fact that it's so easy to walk as well here. You know, when you compare it to our Taiwan situation, the side walks or the pavements are always broken up in Taiwan. They're either blocked with someone's selling something, their motorcycle,
stands,
their parking, their
boiling
cars.
Water, boiling oil.
Yeah, boiling oil, I was going to say, more likely. Or they've just physically blocked it off and put up a wall. So,
where they park their cars there.
It's just impossible to walk more than a couple of meters. And so, of course, you're taking your scooter, driving, getting around that way. So here there's that nice, healthy sense of actually walking between.
Yeah, it seems like everywhere where there is sidewalk area, it's clear. So
it's
I think
clear.
That's... easy to walk.
And, you know, you can really, you can go from A to B, you know, you can go as far as you want. There's sidewalk, there's pavement.
There's usually something you can get by.
Yeah.
Not always. When you get out of downtown, there's some places where it gets really thin and breaks down to just a little dirt track.
Okay.
Usually there is. Compared to Taiwan, yeah. Taiwan's always got sidewalks, of course. In Taiwan, you've got the buildings and then the overhang for the second floor. But that sidewalk area, which should be guaranteed to be there, as you say, is almost always blocked. Now, in China, I find it's inconsistent. Some places have huge sidewalks. Some places have absolutely no sidewalk.
Yeah, if you're in the big city, of course, you know, if you're really downtown Shanghai, no problem. You've got lots of paved sidewalk. But yeah, it's varied and inconsistent, isn't it? Sometimes you've got it, sometimes you haven't got it. Sometimes, of course, it's torn up for building work. But I think the general thing in Singapore is that consistency and how they really...
It's always there, it's always clear.
Always there, and well, it's more than clear. It's usually super clean as well, I should add, since someone's probably pressure washed it the day before.
You can eat off of it.
Yeah. the thing
although
that I
have seen motorcycles blocking. If you go down to Simling Computer Center, people will be parking their motorcycles there. And we're going to talk about motorcycles a little bit later.
Yes.
It's but very rare.
Yeah, I was going to say it's rare. I've yet to see that, but you've been here a few more times, a bit more frequency. The other thing that's interesting is what they're really working on developing now, which is the whole bicycle phenomenon. I mean, we've talked about that in some of our other shows as well.
Yeah, we had Darcy on for a bicycle show about the bicycle phenomenon. I've actually been at the airport and watching groups of people with their bicycles packed up in boxes, taking them over to Taiwan for a bicycle trip, because Taiwan's so famous for bicycling. So there are groups and clubs here in Singapore where they do cycling.
Cycling, but it's not that big thing that it is now
in Taiwan.
I think
the biggest problem is there's the roads. There must be a reason for this, but the roads seem to all be pre-designed to be big and fast.
Yeah, the traffic flows faster. I mean, you've been to UK, so you know
it's
that
just like
it's
that.
Kind of just like that. And occasionally, I've noticed you still have that sort of sense of Chinese driving as well, where people come to a junction and, well, you know, looking is kind of optional, and you just bust out into the traffic.
Yeah,
and
I would
keep
be a
going.
Bit scared. And the thing is, when you're in Taiwan, unless you're on a highway, you really never can achieve high speeds in a car.
Yes.
Everything's slow going.
Slow and gentle, and everyone's kind of easing back a little bit on the speed because they know, you know, it's kind of
and you've
chaotic.
Got that motorcycle lane on the right side, which is either physically separated, and in China, often physically separated.
Yeah, there's often a barrier.
A barrier, or just a line on the road, and you're not allowed, the car's not allowed there, and the motorcycle's not allowed out. But in Singapore, nothing like that.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. It's kind of, you've probably seen just down from our place here, they've got that bike lane that they're starting to develop along the edge of the pavement, which I think is a real nice development. It, at the moment, has no beginning, no end, as it were, but it's definitely something they're really working on. There's some bike trails out in the, I think, the east side, a few on the west side.
Yeah, there's some good bike trails on the coastline, so... In general, biking it's not biking friendly, although there are clubs that go out to some mountain areas and do that, you know, specialization stuff. But just generally, if you want to get a bike to get around, I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, it's not anticipated. I think that's the message everyone says. They say, you know, here people are driving the cars, they're not going to expect to see a bike, so
you
have to be really careful. The interesting thing that people tell me is actually a lot of the immigrants who come from China often get a bike, they ride a bike around, and you see some of these fairly, you know, simple kind of basic
crickety
mountain bikes, crickety old bikes.
Now, you can go downtown, you can find one or two bicycle shops, and the prices are quite high, about at least two, up to three times higher for the giant bikes that you can get in Taiwan. So the prices are high. I think it's a real specialized market. But then you do see these crickety bicycles, or the mopeds, which are bicycles with a small engine kind of thing. And I think a lot of imported workers, temporary workers, do use those to get around.
Yes, you can see the tendency. I think you see people riding a few of the mopeds, the scooters, but the immediate thing is how much less these are than Taiwan. I mean, in Taiwan, of course, we've got the scooter sea that we've talked about. Here, you really don't see that. The thing that you do see are the higher capacity bikes, though. There's definitely a lot more of those. They're a lot more popular here.
Well,
but everything
of course, in Singapore,
is relative,
you're allowed
though.
To ride regular motorcycles, just like in Hong Kong. And for Taiwan, that was outlawed for many years.
Yes, and there's the slow acceptance, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
And,
well, it's only part accepted. Of course, back in Taiwan, you can have the high capacity, but you can't drive them on the freeway.
Right.
I think that was the recent development. You can ride them on the high-speed kind of dual carriage roads, but not onto the actual freeway. So,
and when you say high capacity, I think it used to be limited to 200cc or under.
Oh, was that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So everyone's growing up with that market. They're all used to it. It seems like in Singapore, you don't get that at all. You do get the some trail bikes, some of the 150cc motorcycles, but there's not that just scooter market
yeah,
at
not
all.
That big scooter body, is there? I mean, we've talked about that in a few of our shows now, and there's just not... It's such an obvious thing. I mean, the whole Taiwan thing kind of repeats here in terms of you're not talking big distances, you're talking convenience, you're talking that preference for getting around quickly, talking that preference for being able to just stop, buy and go. But it really hasn't taken off at all in the same way. And I'm quite sure it's regulated, and you certainly see that with all the cars here.
I mean, well, when you talk to people, when I talk to students or I talk to colleagues, you get an answer that is actually a stereotypical answer that people throw out for lots of things in Singapore, and it will be a kind of pseudo blaming somebody else as an outsider. So, well, nobody likes to do that because that's what the Malaysians do.
Mm.
The Malaysians are the ones that run the motorcycles. And so there's a little bit of truth to that. When you look at who is driving motorcycles around, it does tend to seem to be other ethnicities rather than the local Chinese ethnicity. So then they see that as being something weird not to do. But I think it's probably a legal structure built up from the beginning. They don't want the chaos of Taiwan, that kind of situation where everyone's riding everywhere. Use the MRT, which is quite available. The stations are so close together, you can literally walk between them.
Yes, I mean, the MRT, it's only started really, I think, to grow in the last 10 years here. But that really has been pushed on. You can see a lot of disincentives, like for car purchase. I mean, the thing that strikes me here is, yeah, there are cars here, and most of them are pretty new. But when you look at things like vehicle tax, you want to buy a car, you're looking at 200, 250% tax on your vehicle. You're looking at having to get the certificate of authority. You have to bid for that, which is probably anything up to the cost of the vehicle pre-tax. You're then looking at car parking for it.
Oh, yeah, that's
insuring. All the other things that go with running it, just to like physically have a set of keys in the car and
I think it's a great example of when the government tries to stop something, they don't stop it. Because when I first came over to Singapore in the early 90s, there was very few cars on the road. Now there's just car jams, traffic all the time, packed. And lots of people you and I run into who are teachers and professors, they all have cars. And so here's an example of the government tries to stop something, and all they end up doing is all along the chain, like tripling, quadrupling the price of every single thing. So people are working just to pay, working an extra something on the side just to pay for their car parking space.
I mean, it's incredible. I mean, in fact, I think what has been achieved by putting the tax and the structures on purchase of a car is actually you've turned it into a very exclusive item.
Yeah, right.
So what happens is you create... I was going to say the word brand. You can see how addled my brain is getting today, Clyde.
Well, you create an aspiration.
Aspiration. You also create an image in terms of when you've got a car, it says a lot about who you are.
Your
and
peer
the kind
pressure.
Of your peer pressure. It's a statement of what you make in a month and who you are, really.
Yeah,
and
your social
you
group you
see.
Belong to. Right. So this is all that aspirational idea in marketing. And it plays right into the hands of it. And I find it actually easier in Taiwan to, I have a car, but I actually drive my scooter everywhere. But in Singapore, obviously just the opposite. If you have a car, you got to drive the car because you got to, you know, show who you are.
It's the same in Hong Kong. You know, it's a statement of who you are. You own your own apartment in Hong Kong. You drive a car. But, of course, there it's not just what car you drive. I mean, you drive up in a Porsche or a Mercedes. It's a massive statement about your position in society. And we've talked about this as well in some of our other shows, the idea that people are communicating often through nonverbal ways about what they do and their position and their status. And Chinese is so orientated towards status through education or through financial wherewithal. And this just sends that signal. And as I say, this is a kind of side result of developing these kind of financial
It trickles down. It gives middle-income people that pressure to spend up rather than relieving them of it. And so lots of people who are not in a financial position to have a car, I think, do. And I ask them, you know, what's the point? In Taiwan, I would love to get rid of my car. It's such a burden. But no, they got to have the car. So that's the car market. Of course, gas and all those other things, insurance, are expensive. But when you're on the road, it's basically cars and taxis and buses. Have you taken any buses?
Oh, you know, I haven't actually, Clyde, but one of my students came over for a conference, and he was just so excited. He got into one of those buses with two levels. Now, that's just something we don't see in Taiwan. Of course, it feels home from home for me from London. But, yeah, you've got those double-decker buses, single-decker buses. There's quite a lot of them. I haven't ridden one yet. What's it like?
Oh, they're really convenient. And, you know, the good thing about the MRT, it really goes lots of places. They've just finished a couple more lines, including an outer circle line. So it's really convenient. You can walk between some of the stations that are so close. But, you know, there's always those places you can't get to. And then you can just jump on a bus. So they're very integrated. You can use your same card. So you just get off the MRT, jump on a bus. When you get off, you swipe your card. And you get paid, you get charged for that. You get on, you swipe it. You get off, you swipe it.
Yeah, it's just like the, what do we call it, the octopus?
Right, exactly.
Just like in Hong Kong, now in London as well. And that's just the whole convenience of the thing. It's just great, the two, integration of the two. And schedules as well, I think, match up quite nicely between the MRT, the subway, and the bus. You can see people coming out of one, getting on the other.
Yeah, it really works smoothly. Yeah. And the times of day, they increase the numbers, the frequencies. So it's really, really done well. Now, one thing that I wanted to look at is how this all is used in Singapore in a way that you've seen in other places like New York, like London, like Hong Kong, which is the advertising that goes on inside these places. Of course, you're going to make some revenue by having advertising in your subways. That's very normal. In fact, one of the advertising you always see is public messages from the government. Don't smoke, don't litter, these kinds of things, right? But what really impresses me is in Singapore, the marketing message, the integrated marketing message, fits into the MRT, the buses, the taxis, really quite amazingly, an overall kind of scheme to do this.
Yeah, it was interesting you mentioned that because, I mean, advertising in the metro or subway or tube is, you know, it's always been there, right from the classic Guinness ads that were, you know, in the London subway. We've got them now. But I think, Clyde, something had struck you that was kind of a little bit different about the way it seems to operate here. I mean, when we look at the photos we've got, I mean, when we look at photo one here, I mean, that's a fairly classic ad.
Yeah, I think that reminds me, you know, if you didn't tell me, I would have guessed that was in Shanghai.
Yeah, it could be in Shanghai.
Much like a Shanghai,
yes, it's
one,
kind
yeah.
of that whole glass yeah. thing. It's a pretty straightforward ad. I think we're looking, is it banking, that one? It looks
yeah,
like
it's a
HSBC,
bank. Yeah,
that
exactly.
one. But then these...
The next ones are the interesting ones. So 2, 3, and 4, and 5 are actually different pieces of glass. This is the glass that stops you from jumping onto the track.
Yeah,
right?
We should say when you go into the MRT, it's London still keeps that sort of danger feel that there's nothing between you and the train and the track. But here they've gone for that separation. They tend to have that glass wall, a bit like Hong Kong, don't they?
Exactly. Yeah, they tend to, not all of them, but they've been working on it. Their goal is to have them all this way. So the doors are usually clear, but then right next to the door you have the glass that's fixed. And here we have a series of ads for the same product, and each one is reinforcing the same message. Sometimes the series, in this case, it's a dietary supplement, so they're talking about losing weight. You can't fit into your clothes. Sometimes they actually tell a story, so it's a series of panels that tell a story. And you'll go to different stations and they'll even follow up with different messages. And so I find this to be the integration, the overall marketing integration is done really, really well the way it fits into the MRT and the other transportation systems too. Of course, at picture 6 and 7, you see the very common way, which is they, you know, just have things on the glass, on the doors of the train itself. That's very normal. Although I haven't seen this much in, I didn't think I saw this in London, that they're actually putting the decals onto the glass.
Yes, I haven't been back for a while, to be honest. But yeah, that, I mean, they are there, but to a lesser extent.
And yeah, the way they kind of like break out. It's like a cartoon character, the way they have no limits or frames or not. They're not square, you know.
The glass makes such a great sort of space to put the ad. I mean, I think the thing that struck me about, you know, the photo 7 there was the fact that you get a sense of depth. They've been real clever with the positioning of the advert on the inside of the glass. Then you've also got the secondary picture on the metro wall itself, so the wall just behind the window of the train. So you get a sense of depth of field, which is quite clever.
Yeah, sometimes they'll put things inside. I think this one even continues onto the chair that you're sitting on. Mm. So they can move, they even move into the train to do this.
And then,
of course, you have your normal signs.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've got the normal ones there, which are, which numbers are those? Those are 8 and 9.
8, 9, 10.
I was going to say, I'm not quite sure they're completely normal. We've touched on the ones that you get in China that says something like, don't bring a bomb into the subway, which, you know, I'd have thought is common sense. The non-normal bit here, which is rather special, is no durians.
Yeah, no durians.
Which anyone who's Western or outside Singapore, durian is kind of a... People love it here. They go wild for this fruit. But anyone who's ever smelt it, who isn't from this bit of the world, it's really, really a super acquired taste. I mean, you
pungent.
Almost gag on it, I have to say.
Pungent. We actually have another video from my group that's just on the durian, so check that out.
You can see it's a massive, it's a real massive delicacy here. People love it.
It's in candy, it's in ice cream, it's in everything.
It's everywhere, but it's really, it has a real strong odor as well, which is why it's clearly been discouraged. But you can see there's no fine for taking it down there.
Yeah,
but
don't you love that one?
It's a gentle reminder, you know, you're not being socially acceptable.
And that's your smoking fine is 1,000. Your eating or drinking is 500. Flammable, 5,000. Durians,
it's a strong hint that it depends on, you know, how many you've got, I guess.
Yeah, please don't. Someone might complain. That's also a reflection of Singapore in general. I think it's that feeling of you're always guided what to do.
Yes, there's a sense that's enough to tell people that's not what should be done. And you've got the cameras here. You see these gangs of kind of cameras around the stations. You know, it's a gentle reminder, you are being watched, people are aware of what's going on, security is there. I mean, Singapore, because of its sort of historical legacy, is quite careful at managing crime. So that's a reminder, you know, towards appropriate behavior. But I think that the number of cameras I see here are nothing when we think of, like, London. But you've got that... cultural bit, historic bit, it's the capital of cameras. We've got that sort of historical bit, which is enough to remind people that you are being controlled, you ought to behave properly, and then the cameras kind of remind people that you are also being watched. Moving on from that kind of space, you've got these intriguing set of, you know, a hole in the floor there.
Yeah, I wanted to wrap up with this kind of overall integrated marketing message, which I think is really executed well in Singapore. Of course, it's just a city state, it's small, so I guess it's easier to do. But the way they integrate it into the taxis, the subways, the buses, it really works well. And one campaign I've often, not this specific one, but often there'll be a campaign and they will buy whole cars at a time. And then they'll use, as we just saw, on the windows, but then they'll use the seats. They'll also use the floor with decals. They'll also use all the banner areas with the decals. Every place in the whole car will become one kind of marketing message. And so here we begin with the pillar.
Hole in the floor. Yeah,
yeah. The hand-holding thing there in the middle of the car actually has been painted yellow and black, which is kind of like a warning
Yeah, I mean, normally we say it's like a silver thing.
It's just aluminum, yeah.
It's a real smart design. You can get lots of people's hands on there, but normally it's like silver. Here it's like yellow-black, which is that typical warning, isn't it? Something to look out for.
And then the decal on the floor shows the floor like an earthquake happening. Then you move on to 14. You can see the logo. This is from Carl's Jr. It's a hamburger store. I've not been there in Singapore. My son's been there in Shanghai. They make really big burgers. A little bit too expensive for me.
These must be American style.
Yeah, exactly. So you can see the message. You'll need a wider mouth or a wider door. And then you, in picture 25, the hamburger breaking through the wall. So you can see, you keep reinforcing that message. And this is what's called the integrated marketing message.
Yeah, you've really, and in case there's a mistake, yes, you've got that picture of the product right there. And your client is right in your face. And then the messages is of the size of the product. Now, this was kind of intriguing as we got into our 17 and 18. You know,
yeah,
they're saying it's new, it's thick burger. Okay, the statement that it's thick, but then the thing that was kind of, you know, quite in your face is most love it thick, which we've just been talking about, you know, the place where we are, and that's kind of pretty strong on innuendo in my
mind. All the messages, this one, some like it long but most like it thick. Another message is it's so thick it'll tear something in you. Another one is, be careful where you shove this thing.
Another one is,
it's going to get messy.
These are not short on innuendo.
Yeah, so I mean, I see a lot of these advertising campaigns with a whole car, and then maybe multiple cars or every other car is all done up this way. And it's quite impressive when you're inside because it becomes a 3D immersive kind of advertisement. You're actually inside. It's hard to miss. But this was the first time I saw one that's so frontal with its sexual overtone. And for Singapore, I was a little bit surprised it got by.
Yes, because, of course, if you are putting up significant adverts, they do have to be cleared by the border censors. So recently there was a full three-page advertisement by Mercedes. It was right. It just occupied the whole front of the local broadsheet. And that would have clearly had to be cleared. So this has to go through that censors.
Sometimes the message does not have to be very clear at all to get censored. I'd heard that IKEA had an advertising campaign and they were opening up their second store. Or maybe it was their first store, I'm not sure. But the advertising campaign in the MRT stations was, at last you have choice.
Okay.
That was banned.
Right,
they
yeah.
They shut it down. Because of the political implication.
Yes, I mean, you do read about, it's very clear that where people tread on to some political spaces or political topics or they politicize their message, that's where people tend to get censored or it's not deemed as helpful in terms of the local context. Whereas this is, you know, it's sexual, it's risque, but clearly from a social point of view, they didn't see that
as
troublesome.
Still, I'm really surprised, to be honest. I mean, a lot of school kids take the bus. And I can see, you know, parents looking at that and saying, look, I don't want to have to explain this. Some like it long, but most love it thick. And it's a little bit much, you know, with primary school kids on the bus, on the MRT. So I was surprised it got by, and I would be really curious to look it up and see if it did have any criticism. But anyway, my main point was that integrated marketing message.
Yeah, they really... As you say, they take the real advantage of the fact of how busy the MRT is. It's really immersive. The other thing you were saying, I'd seen trials of a different way of advertising being used in places like Shanghai and Beijing, where they're developing these diode panels so that as your train moves along, you get like a movie effect as you look out of the window going through the tunnel, which sounded kind of quite interesting because it's kind of the other way around from what you normally
have.
Yeah,
there's one in Singapore on the way downtown, and they're fixed pictures, so they're LEDs. They can be reprogrammed, and of course it's just like a movie because a movie is just a series of
stills, basically.
Stills, yeah. So I've seen that in, they had it here. I think it's still here on the way downtown, so you can check that one out.
Lots of interesting things about how quickly you turn it on and off to cope with variations in train speed, but they're doing this kind of thing, so it makes it much more involved. So interesting use of the space. Of course, I think it's really reinforced because the whole space is so clean and so managed that the impact
Singapore,
of this kind of advertising is really, really palpable. It's right in your face.
Yeah, extremely clean and well kept. Yeah.
That's great.
I mean, it's like being in a hospital all the time.
It is, yes. When I look outside and I see like the sidewalk, I really, you know, I wouldn't mind eating my sandwich off there most of the time.
All right, James. Well, that wraps it up for a little bit about the transportation and marketing messages in Singapore. So see you next time.
That sounds great. Look forward to it,
this
Clyde.
This is Talk of Asian Marketing with a special emphasis on localized Chinese consumer behavior. Our website is ccc.qbook.tv, where you can find other audio and video episodes with photos, links, and information related to today's conversation. Subscribe to leave comments and access research episodes with applied topics and research reports.